is the Necro Macho Entertainment Podcast. Oh yeah. Welcome all you hive scummers who think they can rise to the top of the spire.
Welcome to episode 9.5 of the Necro Macho Entertainment Podcast. Once again, I am Roy.
And I'm Richard.
And this will be a very short episode for a book review of Survival Instinct by Andy Chambers.
Andy Chambers.
All right. So hopefully y'all have read this book, because you've had plenty of time since I last, since I originally said we're going to do this. If not, oh well, no big deal. Spoilers, we're going to read the book, but it's been out for over 20 years now. So
yeah.
Well, not over 20 years. Actually, it's been out for 18 years. So the book came out in 2005.
Yep.
It is the first novel.
Necromunda novel
they released.
Yeah.
It was not the first Necromunda book they released.
Oh, it wasn't. What was the first?
The first book they released was Status Dead Zone.
Okay.
Which is an anthology, which was, they released it just before this book.
Oh, but an actual like novel. This is the first one?
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that was just a collection of short stories.
Oh, okay. Is it, so were those stories collected from like White Dwarfs? Was that where they published the originals?
I don't know. I can find out, because
okay.
I have the book.
Okay, so, cool.
Well, and we have the digital copies of the book, but yeah, you have the physical. Yeah, I don't know.
Just curious. Yeah, just asking.
Yeah, we can find out.
Okay.
So for future reference, we are planning on doing a review of all the novels in order they came out in, and that will be much more, how do I say, responsible with my time so we can get these out when we said we are.
Yeah, yeah.
So this book is about Madonna Yolanti.
Madonna.
Okay, so I thought this was an all right book. I mean, for what it is,
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I've certainly read worse.
I would almost put this in like a young adult category.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely fits that genre, that theme. My issue when it comes to fantasy, science fiction, the thing that's really tough is having, for me, the combat, like the action scenes in the book, can just feel clunky. And that's where I think that this book struggled the most. But things I really did enjoy about it were the locales, the settings, all the different like things that are introduced into it, and kind of expanding that lore, that background, to give you, because I'm looking at it from a hobbyist standpoint of, oh, this is really interesting to pull ideas for terrain, especially.
Yes.
And that thing that's where this book really excelled.
Yeah. So I agree with you. Like, it felt like Andy Chambers was trying to shoehorn some things in there.
Yes.
Like Madonna. Nothing she really did in the whole book would I consider somebody being mad or crazy. Now, the other story about Madonna, why she has her bionic eye, is like some guy called her pretty in a bar and she gouged out her own eye. That is mad.
That's
crazy.
Yeah.
And this book, she takes risks. She's the protagonist, which they're supposed to do. There's nothing she does. And they're like, you're mad, Donna. Like, no, she's an underhive ganger.
Yeah.
Doing what she does.
And for the most part, she's acting pretty rational.
Yeah. Nothing she does is, I don't think there's anything that I consider like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. But I mean, okay, so she got the name Madonna, stabbing out her own eye, but you only got two eyes, so you can only do that once, really?
Well, she has a bionic eye, so you can do it again.
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. So the book starts off Madonna getting a letter saying, hey, I got information on you. We need to talk.
Got information, and by the way, here's your full, like, actual, like...
official name.
Official, like...
First
High Gothic
name.
Yeah.
Which actually means something, unlike our American names.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't remember. Let's see. It's on page 13 if you have the original novel, which I don't think people are going to be following along. I ain't going to pronounce this other crap. Which means that Donna, the divinely beautiful daughter of Patriarch Sylvanus of House Yolanti.
Ah.
Yeah. Like some elvish name kind of thing going on.
Oh, there. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing a hobbyist would get out of this book is the setting, you know, the world building in this book. That's what you, if you want to read this book, you're going to read it for the, besides just being Necromunda, but you're going to read it for the world building.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like it talks about the wireweed, Like that's not.
Oh yeah.
I don't think that's any of the in any of the newer GW publications because that's okay. That's a cool for thing. Why are we? You know, it's going to snag you and strangle you.
Yeah. That's, yeah. The more you struggle against it.
Yeah. But the world building, like a thing she talked about in the beginning of the book, how there was acid rain and it wasn't burning her skin enough to be dangerous, but it was good because it got rid of lice and parasites that's on your body.
Yeah.
I'm like, taking an acid bath, that's effective.
Removing those organisms. Yeah.
You know, you adapt to your environment and that's like, hey, we don't need to stay out of this rain. It's not really going to hurt us, but it'll kill this crap that's on us.
Yeah.
Let's see how they talk about the giant rats and how they're intelligent and how they're stalking her and just waiting for her to mess up.
Yeah,
pounce on her.
Trying to pounce on her. Yeah.
Yeah. Some good world building.
Yeah.
Are there rat models for Necromunda?
Rat models?
Yeah. Because that would actually kind of be fun.
Yes, there are. So you have the official.
That are not Skaven.
Yes. You have the official bomb rats for Kador.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But there is, I think they made some for original Necromunda, some rats, but in 17, the only models are for the Kador.
Okay.
But now if GW makes all kinds of rats and not just Skaven, but the Skaven do have some good little rats on their sprue, like put some in pieces of terrain.
Yeah.
Like on my Necromunda terrain, like just a little rat in the corner because the rats are everywhere in Necromunda.
Yeah.
Talking about her panic, you know, the fear of getting stuck or trapped.
Oh,
And you're never going to get out.
Yeah, you just die where you're stuck at. Yeah.
The
that I would say that part definitely freaked me out. I'm claustrophobic.
Oh.
So okay. That was like, okay, yeah, I can get that.
Yeah, that's a hell of a way to die.
Yeah.
There alone. Yeah. Or some giant rats coming up and eat you while you're still alive.
While you're still alive. Yeah.
Yeah. The best the like I said, the world building where she's in the chemical cistern while chasing the rats, I'm like, I want to build that. I'm going to build that for part of the Underhive War. That's great. Or she finally gets out and she's walking through all the cogitator banks, just rows and rows. She's trying to find a way out and she finally sees some smoke moving. And she's like, oh, I can climb up there.
Yeah, there's a draft there.
Yeah, she's talking about how the acritic smoke everywhere, you're always breathing that in and you're just used to it. They're just used to it. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, for us, it'd probably kill us.
Yeah.
I like the hypocrisy of the nobles talking about how the spires and they're coming back from their hunt and the Underhive, how they were so brave and noble, the sacrifice of going down there. And then the book talks about how basically they're hypocrites. You know, they have, you know, all this food in their armor and their armor fights better than them. Their armor is smarter than they are.
It's big game hunting.
Yeah. It's big game hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. How they have parades for them. They're such big hypocrites, you know, the Underhives, you know, it's just a giant boogeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the nobles actually do much worse than the Underhives because they, like she says, the humans, even the sons and daughters are just things to be sold and bought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're, what would they be? Not Underhivers, but Hivers?
Just Hivers.
Okay. Yeah. They're not the best people in the world.
Yeah.
any stretch.
Talking about going farther into the book where she's having flashbacks of when she was in the spire and how they had the dome that had the four seasons and they didn't know what snow was.
Yeah.
It was just white powder like ash and it's made of water vapor because they don't know snow.
Yeah.
Even though they do have polar caps, but they're in the hive, so they don't ever go there.
They never go there. Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't imagine you'd be going out into the ash waste to explore. Doesn't seem like a super safe place.
Noble thing to do.
Yeah.
The guilders code for their records.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's smart. Because I read it. I'm like, what the hell is this? And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you're putting messages in the messages.
Yeah.
So
I like that. I'm like, that's something great to use if you.
If you're trying to make more narrative, like.
Yeah, in your campaign. Like a lot of people do the, like a little gazette or a flyer.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work. If you do that, good on you.
Yeah.
But just some little code on there, you know, see if you're an arbitrator. If your players could figure out what it means, you know, they might get some bonus.
Some bonus. They could potentially get to a spot first before everybody else.
Yeah.
And
cash in on some crits.
Yeah. Or find some cool weapons or something.
Yep. The bar shootout.
That was a great scene.
Yeah. So.
So the whole thing is she gets a letter and then it becomes a request of trying to find out who sent this letter.
Yeah.
She doesn't know who it is. And kind of takes her all kind of like a Indiana Jones, like globetrotting as far as like, oh, yeah. Here's Cliff Falls. Here's this. Here's that. Here's a scene in the bar, and here's like on the edge of some sea and stuff like that.
Yes.
So eventually she ends up and she has to sneak in to the town.
Dust Falls. Yes.
Because they're under
lockdown because scabies are out there.
Yeah. And they're constantly just assaulting the base or assaulting the outpost. So, or town or whatever you want to call it.
It's a town.
Okay.
Yeah. So the bar fight, I appreciate that because it shows how unhinged everybody is. Like, oh.
Unhinged. But also remember the whole thing of like, no lance pistols in my bar. That was the whole thing.
Yeah, no shooting in the bar. Yeah.
Yeah, no shooting.
And no shooting bar. And then immediately, oh, guns a-blazing.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, it's the time for you to die. Yeah. Everybody's just like going to town. So that was a good scene. Some of the dialogue was kind of eh.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that scene especially, because you got Cawdor, you got Dalok, you got Goliaths, you have Orlocks. I don't think you have any other gang in there. I think that was it.
Yeah.
There were no Eshers there.
No, those come later.
Yeah. So this is one of the main differences you'll see in these older novels is how the lore has changed. Because the Goliath was just a big beefy dude. You know, he's not the gene bred thing he is now.
Oh, okay.
The Dalok were just sneaky.
Yeah, because this is before N17, so they're going off of 95 Necromunda.
Yes. Okay. So the Dalok are just dudes in trench coats that are sneaky and assholes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't have all these like weird powers and.
Yes.
Okay.
They don't. The biggest, besides the gangers being different,
yeah.
The biggest lore change is downtown.
Downtown
is no longer a thing in the current lore.
Oh, it's not?
No, okay. It's some city.
Okay. That's some city. Okay.
Yeah, that's some city now.
Gotcha. Okay.
So they moved it from
some city that was just burned to the ground.
Well, they get exploded to the ground. Yes.
Exploded to the ground. Yeah.
Yeah. Exploded into the sump. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The guess. Yeah. That okay. thing they're going to rebuild. So that's the biggest change in lore that I saw in this.
Okay.
Cause, Dust Falls is there. Dead Man's Hole is still in the current lore. And I forget the other town she went to,
but I will say that I do appreciate that. I like that. In the sense that there's a progression, like obviously, like okay, downtown becomes some city is now burned and exploded and all that.
Well, some city in the
current lore.
Well, actually, the current lore is only lore 10.
Yeah,
it's been destroyed multiple times and rebuilt.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, throughout the book, Andy Chambers really likes to point out the propaganda going on
mm-hmm.
throughout, not just the nobles but the Imperium as a whole. Going on through this.
Oh, with Belladonna just always commenting on it. And just like,
yeah.
All this bullshit that.
Her flashbacks going on and how,
yeah.
You know, I use a third party. You can see everything, you know.
Once you know the speak, you can recognize it throughout.
Yeah. Another part of the world building is how she describes the dark.
Mm.
Like the dark is, it's its own entity.
Yeah.
But just because you're under millions of tons of plascrete and collapsed building domes, there's still light there. Just,
yeah.
You know, the fungus, this little bitty fungus may be getting off the light, but eventually your eyes get adjusted to it so you can see through that.
Yeah.
You know, he does a really good job explaining just how different the dark is.
Yeah.
If you have the book that's on page 124 and 125, I really like that. And then she had a fight against some big reptile thing.
Yes.
And yeah. I'm pretty sure that's where they got the inspiration for
the Sumpcroc.
Yeah, Sumpcroc.
Yeah,
just a big ass Sumpcroc.
Great model, by the way. Love it.
Yeah, it's a good model. I don't like how the head attaches to it. It doesn't fit very well.
Oh, okay. I've always seen them built. I've never built one myself. Yeah. So
the one I got, it was
there like a huge seam or something?
I don't know if I didn't clean it right or clean too much, so okay. Where it lined up didn't line up. So I'm at like...
Oh, so it created a gap. So then you had to fill that.
So instead of trying to fill it, I just got a chain and wrap another chain around that gap. Bam, easy. Because it has chains. It's for its collar.
Yeah, clever solution.
Yeah. She talks about the sump and the different spiders, like the red knees, the brown knees.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the different spiders. Because you don't... They talk about the spiders. They don't talk about the difference of the spiders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think like all those little details, I think Andy Chambers really nails.
Yes.
And that's where the book really excels, because like when they started talking about like towards the end with like the Sumsea of It was just like, it started like, man, I really want to do some Seaboard. That'd be great.
Wait, so when she was up on the ledge looking down at the subsea, describing the swirls of the different types of fog and acid going across, it paints a deadly but beautiful picture.
Yeah.
And then when she gets on the subsea, you know, she finally gets out there and she's talking about it's dark and there's nothing out there, but you still see all these beautiful colors of the iridescence of the oils on the sea.
Yeah.
And how it's quiet. There's nothing there. It's the only quiet place in the Underhive.
Yeah.
Because nothing can survive there. Obviously, there's stuff in the subsea, but nothing above. Nothing can survive there.
Yeah.
And she's finally at peace. That was, I didn't think about it. It's like, it's quiet in the Underhive, but it's never quiet in the Underhive.
Yeah, yeah. There's always something going on. Yeah. Somebody's making noise. Some creature's making a noise.
Building or foundation settling, the hive settling on top of you.
Yes.
Creaking. Yeah. Another point of lore that has changed is Co-Iron isn't the low man on the noble totem pole anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, because her father was going to basically marry her off and then make Co-Iron their servants. Basically what he's going to do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they changed that a little bit. So she gets the letter. She's trying to find
who the person is.
Yeah, this bounty hunter, basically, that's after her. But it's two of them, and she figures out who it is.
Yeah.
She's going. She's getting ambushed. She's fighting her way out of it. She's going up to Dust Falls. She's meeting with the enforcer that helped bring her down.
Into the Underhive.
You know, she's having a shootout. She finds out some information that's going to be important later.
Yeah.
The bounty hunters, I think they had some character. They were kind of...
Yeah, I think everybody outside of, like, Belladonna and the enforcer that helped her... Like, I felt that those two characters were, I would say, the most fleshed out.
Yes.
Like, you see the motivation, the drive for... you see with the enforcer, the motivation and drive that he has of, okay, I'm going to help her get to the Underhive because she's upper echelon. She's important. And it's my duty to get her and keep her safe.
Yes.
Where she's trying to go. And then after taking her to the Ushers, realizing I can't go back without dying myself.
Yeah, how do you call it? He's before he is very, I won't say patriotic. That's not the word I'm looking for. He's very duty bound and idealistic.
Yeah.
In his thinking. And then then at the end of the book, you find out what changed. It's at the very end of the book, you find out what changed. That they're about to go cross the wall into the Underhive. And he's like, hey, you can't be going down here. And she's like, the Imperium's messed up. Himmler ain't helping you. He ain't helping me. He's going to hold me hostage. And she lays it down.
Yeah.
She tells him how it actually is. And it just pops his worldview. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get killed if I go back. This ain't happening. You know, he was loyal.
There's nothing for me here.
Yeah, I got to do the right thing. And he's like, if I do the right thing, I'm going to be dead.
Yeah.
So travels the Underhive with her. And he's still idealistic, you know, because he's the sheriff of Dust Falls, you know, trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And you see how that idealism turned him. And that's why he went to the redemptionists as part of the Redeemer cult. Because he has that idealistic, you know, the Imperium's corrupt. They got to burn everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
when you erase it and just start again.
Yeah. So I like that how he turned that idealism into fanaticism.
Yeah.
The other, so you have the two bounty hunters, Sigel. I don't know how you say it. Sigel, I think. And then
your guess is as good as mine.
And then Kel's his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some of their lines were hokey.
Yeah.
And then you have that flashback with Lars, her little flame she had, who shows up at the end of the book. I'm like, why is this in here? And then he's in there to redeem her, basically.
Yeah, but
to give her a purpose.
I think that it would have been a better narrative, a better story without that. Because the whole thing is she tries to save him, right?
No.
No.
He tries to save her.
Okay, Lars is who?
Lars is the noble she met when she ran away from home and was sitting by the fountain.
Okay.
And he gave her his jacket.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
So he was everything that she ever dreamt of at the time. But then she's like, I gotta go.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're hunting after me.
Yeah, because she was betrothed to another person.
Yeah, she was betrothed to Julius Co-Iron. Julius Co-Iron's older brother, Co-Iron Hare, who she stabbed in both of his eyes and then castrated him.
Yeah.
And then he went insane.
Yeah.
Which I find hilarious. Because he did a good job of making that dude to be a total asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Which is very easy to do, but still.
Yeah.
He did a good job of, like, you got what you deserved.
Yeah. You got your comeuppance.
Yeah. Relli. Relli.
Relli.
The merchant.
Yeah.
His character could not just any merchant. It was, he had no depth. He's like, I'm going to make some money. I need you to help me. And then I'm going to sell you to this noble.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah. And no. And then the main Escher, Teresa?
That sounds right.
No. Tessera. T-E-S-S-E-R-A.
Oh, Tessera. Okay, yeah.
Tessera, yeah. She was supposed to have like the biggest impact on Madonna.
And you saw it through some flashbacks, because the whole thing, like how the book is structured, is there would be a chapter, then a flashback, then a chapter, and...
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Flashbacks at least every other chapter.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. But besides her going to the Eschers, saying, hey, I want to stay with you guys, and the Eschers are like, hey, you're a hot commodity. We don't want to get roped into anything by the elites.
Yeah, your dad's already attacking us. You can't stay here.
Yeah, it's not safe for us. It's not going to be safe for you. So just, it's better for both of us. Just go. Even with the flashbacks leading towards the end of the book, it never felt like there was like a deep connection between any of them.
Yeah, so she's dying then. I can go get the Medicaid unit off this asshole noble's back and bring it to you. And then the plane's flipping around, and she's like, oh, she probably flew off. Okay, well.
Yeah.
No, like, oh my gosh, I didn't get to save her, nothing. Oh, she probably did. Okay.
Yeah.
Move on.
Well, leading up to the end arc of this is the, she gets another message, says, hey, come and find me at this, like, barge or flying barge or whatever.
Yeah.
They show up, and she's like, oh, this is a trap. It's obviously a trap. I'm going to go anyway. And goes in it solo. And then has the Eschers come out and help her.
Yeah.
So at
that point, they told her that she's an icon.
She's too important to die.
Yeah, you're bigger than life.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I don't fucking want that. That's not me. She tries to reject that.
Yeah.
And well, they just don't let her reject it. They're like, nope, it doesn't matter what you think. We're going to do what we want.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, when they told her that, that's when they were overlooking downtown and looking out in some seat. That was the funniest part in the whole novel for me. Was talking about when she's looking at the rat that was cut in half and the Karen bat was eating one.
Mm-hmm.
And the front half of the rat was still alive and was trying to crawl away.
Yeah.
And she was like, and then the Karen bat got it. And she's like, no, Halfsy, you died. some of those are funny as hell to me. Mm-hmm. I'm like, Halfsy, okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, we're running and grabbing the Medicaid unit for... Yeah. Teresa or whatever her name is.
Tessera.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I didn't understand this connection with her. Like it wasn't like, I would expect that for like your sibling is dying and like, or your lover or whatever. Maybe there's something more there that we don't know.
Yeah. He didn't build up the relationship with her. Like, okay, yes. She's the person you met. She was basically your gang leader.
Yeah.
But they really didn't talk about any time with her during the gang. Like they had that once in the beginning where she was with the gang and they were in the shootout with, was it Goliath?
Yes.
Yeah. And the shootout with Goliath. But that was it. Like there was no deeper connection, like telling her that she mentored her or whatnot.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, in my opinion.
Now, if the enforcer, like if it was reversed with the enforcer, that I would get. That would make much more sense.
Oh, yeah.
As far as like him going and helping her and he's like critically wounded, bleeding out, and she's like, oh, I can go get the Medicaid unit and save your life, or go and get after this other guy, then that's a true conflict there. That's where you have, like, a good story.
Yeah, when she was with him in his office, like, you can tell there was a depth of background between them two. Like, they've interacted multiple times throughout the year she's been down there. You know, they have a rapport.
Mm-hmm.
With the Escher, she's like, basically, like, she hung out with her a couple times, and that was it. That's what it kind of seemed like, even though we know it's more.
Yeah,
yeah. The fight on the electroplane, or whatever the heck they call it, the airplane.
Yeah.
The seaplane is what it actually is. It threw, like, it jarred me out of the scene when the enforcer dog came out. I'm like, where the hell did this thing come from?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was just out there. I'm like, okay, he has a pit. He basically has a hack cyber massive is what it is.
Yes.
But that just... That threw me out. I'm like, what the hell? And then the witch.
Oh, yeah.
So she was in the one of the hunting parties but then she just saw and never reacted. And the witch does a psychic power. She gets out of it. She tries to shoot the witch and she disappears. Mm-hmm. That seemed like that was just shoehorning a psyker into it.
Just to do it.
Just to do it.
Yeah.
It's like there was.
Yeah, I know. I don't know the constraints as far as when you write a book for GW. Like, do you have to mention, like, they give you a list of all the things you have to mention. And then Andy Chambers at the end is just like, oh, crap, I forgot about Cybermassive. Oh. Just scribbling it in real fast. And
maybe, I don't know. Because I think that witch could have played, it could have built up to that. Like,
oh, yeah,
when,
definitely.
When she was in the, when she got out of the fight, out of Dust Falls, and she was on the beam, and she had to go in that pipe, and the lock mm-hmm. followed her in there.
Yeah.
Like, if the witch would have been near and would have been messed with her mind in there, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
You'd be like, okay, there's a psyker around, and then you find out later that it's her. Like, oh, okay, that's cool. You know, she actually did something instead of just at the end, like, hey, I'm going to mess with you.
Yeah.
And then I'm gone. I'm not real. I'm thinking of your imagination.
Yeah.
Yeah. First, I thought, like, when she said she heard something and she was looking around while she was in the cabin, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's the DeLock, you know, whispers.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's their psychic powers. Like, nope, it's another witch. I'm like, oh. But whispers weren't around back then. DeLock didn't have psychic powers back in the day.
Yeah.
And then the book ended, like, you have a survival, your survival instinct won't let you die. I'm like, oh, there's the name of the book.
Yeah. Saving it for the last sentence.
Well, it was pretty close.
Yeah.
So overall, would you recommend this book to a Necromunda player that just enjoys playing, doesn't care about building terrain or anything, just enjoys playing the game?
I guess it depends on the player, because I could see some like actually really enjoying it and some that like myself, that are just like, like if I'm just coming at it from a playing standpoint, I would not recommend it. But if you're looking for something to go a little bit deeper as far as like the setting, placing your gang in the actual Underhive, I think that it would be advantageous to read it, and then I would recommend it. But I think it just depends on the player.
Yeah.
If you're looking for more and you're listening to this, I think you're kind of already there. So go ahead and just read it.
Yeah.
What about you? What would...
I would tell them you're going to read it for the world building and not the story.
Yes.
You know, Mad Donna seemed like, in game terms, she was a Juve that the third game, she got a bunch of XP and now she's a fucking champion.
Yeah.
And running around, not knowing what the hell she's doing. That's what it seemed like.
Yeah. All of a sudden, she's super badass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because in the book, it's like, hey, ask a Juve. You're like a dumbass Juve. Like the whole time, like you're a dumbass Juve. And she's not doing dumb things, but she's doing things like... You could have thought that out better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Not crazy things, just not that smart of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the world building, like we've already talked about, the Sumpsea, mm-hmm. the Hive, the darkness, the sound.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm like, I want to build this piece of terrain. You want to build the part of the Sumpsea?
Yeah.
I want to build this chemical cistern,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe with some giant rats around or something.
Yep.
Or
yeah.
A tentacle or something, because there was some monster in there.
Rats, you know, of unusual size.
Yeah, I have a tentacle coming out. Actually, build a big enough cistern, it could be a whole dang board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't build one that big, though. But yeah.
So scale, how many stars? 1 out of 5. What would you give it?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, I was not prepared for that.
Do you want me to go first? Or?
I'll go first.
Let's okay. See.
I would say, I mean, because if you're just picking this book up off the street, yeah. I'd give it 2 out of 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just all picking right. it up off the street, like you don't know anything that the book, like if you not as a gamer,
yeah,
you're
yeah.
Like, I'm gonna read this book, 2 out of 5, because it's like
sure. Okay. Okay. From that standpoint, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
From a Necromunda player, I would give it, I want to say 3.5 or 4, because of the world building. Because the world building is good.
Okay.
But that the story kind of distracts from that.
Yeah. So I would say a 3.5. Like 3.5 stars because of the world building. If it didn't have the world, like great world building, 2.5, 3 maybe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of pulpy sci-fi.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, the world building is spectacular.
Yeah. He didn't use too many terms that were just in the 40K universe. There wasn't that many.
Oh, made up terms that they use. Yeah. Yeah. So you weren't having to Google, what's this mean again?
Yeah. I don't think there was like really any at all.
Yeah. No.
Oh, another lore thing that they change is you can pull your plasma pistol up to an outlet and just charge it. I'm like, oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
They changed that. All right. So final verdict is, you want some world building, read it. It's great for that.
Yeah.
If you want an in-depth, evocative story, go read Dune.
Yeah. Yeah. Dune is phenomenal. So.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have anything else about the book?
Nope.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, the world building, the hypocrisy, that's all great.
Oh, yeah.
So, once again, we appreciate you listening. Our next episode should be out pretty soon. And we're going to keep on continuing to do these book reviews. The next book will be Salvation by C.S. Gatto, once again released in 2005. We're not going to start on that yet. We'll let you know when we're actually going
to
do that.
Yeah, and just listen to the podcast. We'll let you know when it's coming up.
Yeah, we'll finish it and record it before we announce it, so you know it's coming out. All right, so I appreciate you listening.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Necro Macho Entertainment Podcast. Ooh, yeah. Where the high scum rise through the top.